Just want to extend my warm welcome, including myself, since I don't come to this Sangha as often, but I have seen some familiar faces and the ones who I don't know. And so, welcome to this Sunday evening here in California, and maybe some other different time zones for you. We are going to begin with a meditation together. I wanted to do this meditation called Arriving Sequence. Some of you may know this. I just want to check to see if anyone has done this before or have. Yeah, okay, so Mary, so a bunch of you have done this before. Okay, great. And so I will keep in mind that there are some of you will be new to this. This is a meditation practice that Philip Moffitt, as one of my teachers, taught. And it is said to be a preparatory meditation practice, but in itself, it's a complete practice itself as well. And so today we will do it. Beginning of this would be a preparatory meditation. And then we'll just let ourselves be in our experience from this arriving sequence. For me, it's really helpful for me to have kind of a clear orientation when I began to meditate. So it doesn't feel like I'm just, tossing myself on the cushion and to hear the breath. And so let's begin and see how it is for everyone. I'm going to start with the sound of the bell. Beginning by taking a long deep breath. Maybe as you breathe out, arriving here and now. Like a coming home to this body, mind, and heart. You may feel and sense here as the space you're sitting in. And maybe you're feeling the sense of now-ness by becoming present to the moment or experience. Sound, the body sitting, silence between the sounds. For me, there is a sense of coming inward. Coming inward to this home, inner home, mindfulness front and center. Heartfulness, front and center. Being present moment by moment without rushing to get anywhere. We know the value of being present just as it is. Maybe mindfulness is flickering in and out. Or when you notice it, way to say, this is how it is right now. Being present for this. Arriving. Being steady. One moment and another. And so the momentary mindfulness may become a flow of mindfulness. You can feel one may become more established in the presence. At some point, the felt sense of the presence may become the primary experience. Present for what's here. And so the felt sense of being available may emerge. You're available to sounds, breath, sensations in the body. Temperature. Temperature in the room or inside the body. Being available feels like this. For me, there is a kind of overall relaxation in my body, my mind and heart. Mindfulness is receptive not going after anything, but it's available to meet. Sometimes at the beginning of the meditation, being available in this raw, open, receptive way can feel daunting. It may be helpful to align and to allow the unsettled parts to be able to feel safe here. Choosing to align. Align with the deepest values. Wholesome intentions. Align with the refuge of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Dropping in the invitation of aligning. And then let yourself settle in the felt sense through the body and through the heart. You don't have to think too much about this. Maybe the body responds to the invitation to align. I could feel my heart settles a little more at ease. My body can soften towards the earth. Maybe a sense of happiness or contentment. Being aligned feels like this for me right now. Aligned and available. Maybe the whole being can relax and soften onto this wholesome ground. Maybe there is a sense of you've arrived. You're home here in this body, mind, and heart. Safe. Grateful. And your breath may shift and change. Maybe you can breathe more easily. Rest here if you like, on this wholesome ground of being available and aligned. If you like, you can also turn your attention to the embodied experience, including the movements of the breath, the stability that comes from the earth element in the body. Bones. And this wholesome ground can hold the multitudes of our experience. In the body, in the mind, and in the heart. If the mind wandered away into thinking, to-dos, plans, when you notice, maybe right now, we can always begin again. Arriving here, returning home, with the humility, inner dignity, and integrity. And releasing criticisms and blames. sometimes if you're struggling with something in meditation, it may be helpful to just open the eyes softly and look at the squares on the screen. Sensing the support of Sangha. Or maybe it doesn't need to be when you're struggling. Maybe you let yourself feel the connection and the support of a community. A practicing community. Refuge in Sangha feels like this. Tenderness, gratitude, connectedness, what's present in your body, mind, and heart right now? in the last minute of the meditation together, remembering the ground of being available and aligned. Maybe just that remembering, you began to have a sense of it. Maybe a hint of it right now. Here, present, aligned, trusting the orientation of the heart. And available. Available to this life unfolding. Yes, I just did taught a day long with Daniel, my dear Dharma friend and co-teacher, and so at Insight Santa Cruz, it was very lovely. Yeah, thank you for noting that, and I also want to just say that I just want to offer my deep bow to say that. I receive your Dana, and on my behalf, I would like to offer it for Philip. And so I'd like to complete that circle of generosity. So yeah, it's such a wonderful thing to live in a culture of generosity. You know, it's such a big thing. It's hard to sometimes grok if, you know, if all of us are living in a culture of generosity, what would it be like? Yeah. I think the world will be very different. But we start with our world here, right here. And so to create that generosity, a culture of generosity. So, I brought something to share today, and I'd like to start this sharing by telling a story, a personal story, and then I'll tell you why I'm sharing this story and what the topic of tonight is, or this today's Dharma Talk topic. So some years ago, I did Sati Center chaplaincy training. This is a chaplaincy training for a lot of people who are interested in incorporating that as part of our Dharma practice. And I did a year-long training. And in this training, I had an opportunity to do my internship at Kaiser Hospital, and that's one of the things I did to kind of explore just in real life how it feels like to do this work. And one of the things I did there in Kaiser Hospital was to assist a wonderful social worker who worked at Kaiser to support a group of advanced stage cancer patients. And I had no clue what I was getting myself into, but that was the condition I was in. And very quickly it dawned on me, wow, this is really hard. And at the beginning, when I was meeting this wonderful people, I think almost all of them are at stage 3, 4 cancer. You know, it's called advanced stage cancer patient support. So I looked at them. They look like a regular people, and particularly one of them, actually there were a few of them, but this particular one that really evoked something in me. And so this is a young school teacher. I think she was in her 30s, and she has a young daughter, maybe three-year-old or something like that. And she had a stage 4 breast cancer, and not curable. And she was dying. And it was really hard for me to be sitting in that group. My son was very young at the time, and I start just having this anxiety, and I was nervous. I was kind of confused, frustrated. How could this happen to, you know, anyone? How could this happen to this young mother? And what about her daughter? And I couldn't help but kind of realizing that this could happen to me too, you know. And so I started having thoughts about, wow, you know, if this happened to me, what would happen to my son, you know, my spouse? And so it was very challenging. And it's to an extent that I had doubts that I could even do this. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, I don't have a capacity to do this. And so fortunately, I had access to my teacher and one of the family retreats. And this was after a little while this was happening. And I had a conversation with my teacher, Gil Fransdahl, and I told him. And I remember that day we were sitting right outside of the kitchen after breakfast, and I sat on the bench outside the Spirit Rock kitchen and dining hall, and he sat next to me. He was just checking in with me how everything is going. And I said, wow, this is, and I don't know about this whole chaplaincy thing, and I don't think I have a capacity to do this work. And then Gil looked at me and he said, well, I'm going to add one word to what you just said. So you don't think you have a capacity to do this work currently. So that one word, boom, something shifted in me. It's like, wow, okay. This doesn't mean that I'm never gonna be, you know, I could never do this, or I could ever, but it just, it's what it is right now. It's difficult, and I had a limited capacity at the time, but just by adding that word, something softened, and I realized, oh, there is a way to continue. And so I realized I had to make some adjustment. And so, but I didn't have to just give up altogether. I rearranged my visit a bit such that I give myself a bit more space, a bit more time, that I can pace myself, and so that I'm not pushing myself when I really felt overwhelmed or when I felt that I'm about to tip over to overwhelm. And so I slowed down, kind of like the turtle, you know, kind of. But I was steady, you know, one step at a time. And over time, I could feel something began to settle. And over the years, you know, I continued to do this work in different ways. But I also realized that, and this is a potent form of a practice for me, and it's both humbling and it's opening. And to this day, I felt like this was a powerful experience that was very meaningful and rather transformative for me. Even though it was extremely difficult and challenging in so many different ways. And so why I share this this story today is because of the topic that I'd like to discuss or share, and that is the topic of doing what is hard to do as a part of the Dharma path. Dharma cultivation, whether it's in relationship to something like, you know, fear of death or fear of loss or other form of difficulties that come in our life. And it's part of the path. And how we're engaging in this path is to learn over time how to skillfully to be with, to work with what is difficult, what is hard. And so now I'm going to bring an interesting sutta. And so some of you may have heard this sutta. This is a sutta called With Kamada. And Kamada is a deity. And that Buddha had a conversation with this deity. And I don't know, some people translate this as God. I don't know what the challenges the gods or the deities may have in their own spiritual practice. But clearly, this deity is struggling. So he comes to see the Buddha and was complaining, oh, this is so hard, so hard to do. And the Buddha responded to Kamada. I'd like to read this sutta. It's a short sutta. And so I'd like to read this for you a little bit, and then I'll unpack this sutta together, maybe. And also just know that if you have a question in between, I'm happy for you to just raise your hand anytime, that I'm happy to respond. It doesn't need me to be in a monologue kind of a way offering the teaching. And so it can be interactive if you like to just raise your hand to ask a question or ask for clarification. But here we are, the sutta. This is in Samyutta Nikaya 2.6, for those who might be interested in looking it up. So with Kamada, so at Savadi, and this is the place where the Buddha often taught, Savadi, standing to one side, the deity Kamada said to the Buddha, "It's too hard, Blessed One. It's just too hard." But the Buddha said to Kamada, "They do it even though it's hard. The stable trainees with ethics and immersion or samadhi, that's another translation, for one who has entered the homeless life, contentment brings happiness." So the thing that's the first verse, the Buddha said, yep, it's too hard, but the trainee still continues cultivating virtue and sila samadhi, and that brings happiness. But Kamada didn't give up and continues by saying, "Such contentment, blessed one, that's hard to find." The Buddha said to Kamada, "They find it even though it's hard. Those who love peace of mind, whose mind love to meditate day and night." Then the next verse. "But the blessed one, it's hard to immerse this mind in samadhi." The Buddha says, "They become immersed in samadhi even though it's hard. Those who love calming the faculties, having cut through the net of death, the noble ones go on their way." This last verse, Kamada says, "But the path, blessed one, is rough and hard to travel. Though it's rough, hard to travel, the noble ones go on their way," the Buddha says. "The ignoble fall head first on a rough path, but the path of the noble ones is smooth. For the noble ones are smooth amid the rough." It's a little cryptic dialogue between the two. I found it quite amusing and interesting, at least for myself. So I'm going to take a little time to unpack this a little bit. Some of you may resonate with Kamada. It's hard to practice, isn't it? It's hard to gather and collect our mind, to be stable, to stay collected and unified. And even, you know, it's hard enough even on retreats, because things happen. And our mind can be thinking about this and concerned about that, and hard to gather, and let alone to be gathered, collected in the midst of our daily life. You know, lots of things happen. You know, my son right now has a performance somewhere, and he was drumming all afternoon in his room. Bum, 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 bum. It just goes on. And so it's hard to be content with the situation we're in at times. It's too hot, it's too cold, we're in pain, our environment is not conducive to be contented or to be in samadhi. So it's hard to practice in all these situations. And the Buddha acknowledged that, and yet the Buddha made it clear. Keep practicing, even though it's hard. And so there are a few things that jumped out for me in this sutta. The first thing is that the Buddha did not deny the difficulties and the hardships that Kamada was complaining about. And yes, the path can be rough and it can be hard to travel. And that's the nature of living this human life. And I was reading, Philip's book recently again, and this a sentence in Dancing with Life that I hear again and again, and I still feel so alive. And he says, "Even under the best circumstances, life is challenging, and much of the time it is difficult. It is always uncertain, constantly changing, and mostly out of your control." I mean, every time I hear it, it just kind of rings truth, isn't it? And yet, the Buddha pointed out that the practice path is not dependent on conditions or situations. We keep practicing, and we're not basing our practice life on a lot of what if conditions or only if conditions. You know, only if I'm in a perfect retreat center with my favorite teacher and in the perfect weather, or none of my fellow retreatants are messing things up for me. You know, we can impose a lot of stuff. Maybe then I'll get 2 minutes of contentment. But that's not how we practice. That's not how we practice. If that's how we're counting on something just right, good luck, right? Good luck. And though the path is rough, hard to travel, the noble ones follow it. That's the statement that the Buddha made. And the second thing that stood out for me in this dialogue exchange is there, as I was reading this verses, I get a sense that the Buddha has a kind of unwavering confidence in the people who persist and commit to do what is hard to do. And so, you know, he kind of have this like, no joke, you know, they do it even though it's hard. And they find contentment even though it's hard. And they become immersed in samadhi even though it's hard. And though it's rough, hard to travel, the noble ones follow the path. Can you feel like a Buddha knows this? So he says, you know, it's hard, but it's doable. It can be done. And he has traveled this path, so he knows this. He has this kind of unwavering confidence for those who follow this path. And so you may ask, we may ask ourselves the question, is it possible to be content even though you may be experiencing pain or heartbreak? Is it possible? And for me, it was this knowing at times that this can be an experience that I have a reference point to, that, oh yeah, I remember this time, that even though I was experiencing a lot of pain, there's some kind of contentment there, that I wasn't making a big problem with it. And when we know, I mean, even though that is not like, you know, always like that, but even though that there are some momentary, if there are some momentary experiences that we know that is possible, it can give us this sense of, oh yeah, I can remember that. And sometimes if we hear teachers or other practitioners who have shared this possibility that they experienced, that we can know, oh, okay, it is actually possible. It is actually possible. Even though it may not be our own experience just yet, but we can feel that possibility. And the question about, you know, is it possible to be gathered in a composed state of mind, even though the conditions may not be conducive and may even feel difficult? you may reflect on some times that maybe, yeah, maybe you have experienced that. Again, it may not be always there, but you know that when you're allowing yourself, giving yourself the permission to continue to practice in a wholehearted way, that yeah, it is possible. It is possible. As I was reflecting on this, what I recognized is that sometimes we don't always trust the practice, and we tend to give up too quickly or too easily. And the short-sightedness tend to blind us from seeing other possibilities that may be available to us, that may be within us. And so this wholehearted kind of sincere practice has an innate potency in it. And it's not a kind of a stubbornness or bang our head against the wall kind of a feeling. You know, reading the suttas sometimes for me was like, oh, you know, does that feel like, you know, you're just stuck in? And my sense is that that's not what is being invited here or illustrated here. Rather, coming out of wisdom and compassion, we know the alternative of giving up the practice is actually not very promising. You know, like I really kind of reflecting about my own experience in chaplaincy training, and I had this kind of relief, wow, I really stuck through this. That is really important. Because I could have just told myself, this is too hard. I'm just not going to do it. But then I wouldn't have had the chance to practice with something that is really needed to be practiced with. You know, the sooner or later we're going to meet our own illness, aging, death, and that of our families. And it's still something that I'm practicing with. And it's not done yet. But that experience helped me to keep going. And if I just said, oh no, I believe I can't do it, probably I would not have taken another step if that was the conclusion I made. And so we know that the alternative is not very promising. And so in kind of reading this sutta, for me, feeling into the Buddha's confidence in this, the Buddha's confidence in the practice path and confidence in the people who follows the path, that uplifts me. That uplifts me. I feel like, wow, okay. It's up to us that we can follow this. You know, we give ourselves to it. And that's the invitation. And the last thing that I like to explore in this sutta is this last verse in the sutta. And says, the path of the noble ones is smooth, for the noble ones are smooth amid the rough. It's kind of cryptic verse. What does that mean, you know? What does it mean that the noble ones are smooth and noble ones are smooth in the midst of roughness? I don't know exactly what the Buddha meant. I have a kind of a feeling about it. And so maybe that's kind of, you know, what's going to come out from how I'm feeling into this and what what this might mean. How might the noble ones be smooth in the midst of roughness or hardship? As I was feeling into it, I kind of asked myself the question, you know, could it be that the Buddha was pointing out the possibility that through the practice, one can become more and more harmonious with the challenges of life? Or maybe to put it differently, that one is less and less in conflict with the hardships and difficulties. And so there is no additional kind of compounding dukkha that comes from our reactivities. You know, I don't like it. I want it to go away. I would rather not. You know, all of this kind of reactivities, and that may come when we meet difficulties. Could it be that the Buddha is saying, for the noble ones, they don't see this as problems? You know, maybe you're having a lot of physical illnesses with very little resources to support one. Or one is having a challenging relationship with someone. But the person who practices the Dharma chooses not to deny or to avoid this. And we can choose to live with the pain without the habitual reactivities, blaming, shaming, or worry, concern, or maybe sometimes even anger or rage. But rather, we can meet with it and just say, oh, this is how it is right now. And in the meditation, I invited for us to see, oh, this is how it is. There may be difficult emotions right now, but can I meet with this with care and with a tenderness and with a presence for this? And so that way, one is in harmony with something that is here. You know, whether it's difficult or whether it's pleasant, comfortable. And so there's a sense of being smooth in the middle of rough, in the middle of roughness. I don't know if that's exactly what the Buddha is pointing to. But in my own experience, I can feel that being a possibility. I think for each of you in the stream of a practice, you may have experiences like this yourself. You know, maybe something really annoying is happening by the normal standard. But you're not being annoyed by it. It wasn't a problem. And so you're smooth in the midst of rough. So how might you open your practice to include what's hard? I kind of shared my own experiences going through and the chaplaincy training in the midst of anxiety and doubts and a whole host of other complaints that I had in my own head. And that's just one example. And there are many other possibilities. I know sometimes people deliberately go into situations that they know that they feel challenged. And the Buddha practiced in the wilderness, in the forest, knowing that fear and dread is going to come up for him. But he chose to practice with it. And he actually had gone through a reflection for himself that he knew he would not be overwhelmed But he knew also that the fear and dread will come. And so he would go practice with it. In the recent times, recent years, that there is this new stream of a Dharma practice called Nature Dharma. Some of you may have heard of it. And one of my teachers, Gil Fronsdal, is kind of leading a teacher training for teachers who would teach to practice in nature. And recently he shared that for some people, practicing in nature has become a very important practice for them. Both the beauty of it and the potency of it as a Dharma practice, and also because of the challenges that it brings that we may have to face. And in one of the recent Dharma talks, and he was sharing that, you know, one evening he was leading this Nature Dharma retreat, and he was sleeping outdoors most of the days on the retreat, or maybe all the days on the retreat. And one night, just right around his head, he was hearing this gunch, gunch, something is being chewed on. And that's scary, you know, but he incorporated that as part of the practice and being with it. And see what comes up, meet it right where it's at. And so sometimes these are important ways for us to open up, to include what's difficult and what may be challenging for us to practice with. Some things we're scared of, maybe a long retreat, or maybe it may not be anything dramatic. It could just be meeting someone who you know that you would otherwise avoid. Or maybe something that you feel a little shaky. It doesn't have to be anything dramatic. And so my invitation with tonight's reflection is maybe to come to a conscious relationship with the hardships and difficulties in our lives. And can we open our practice to include them, whether it's when it's arising right now, here and now, and kind of momentary experiences, and we're inviting ourselves to open to it. Or it could also be deliberate. You know, I know some difficult situations I've been avoiding, and I'm going to see if I wanted to include that, to meet it. And may this exploration strengthen all of us, our own heart and mind, and may it help to support all beings to meet difficult situations and hardships in their lives. And so thank you everyone for your kind attention and for your generous attention. And so